Hello again. I'm Kathleen Dunn. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Thursday, the 10th of December. We have, for the past several months, been presenting a series of programs on healthcare reform in this country, as we've looked at a variety of options for insuring the uninsured, for bringing down healthcare costs. We've also tried to learn things from different countries, and we've talked about healthcare in Barbados, in France, in Finland, in Italy, in Canada, and other parts of the world. This hour, we're going to be looking at a developing country in the world. Some are saying that the World Bank actually said that among countries in the world, Haiti is at the bottom of the World Bank's ranks of health indicators. Our guest this hour spent time recently, and I know a number of doctors throughout this country and the world have spent time in Haiti. Every year, Global Health Ministry sends healthcare teams to sites in Latin America. They send general physicians. Our guest is a pediatrician, surgeons, optometrists, nurse practitioners, nurses, occupational and physical therapists to a variety of countries, including Haiti, also Peru and Brazil, and other countries, Guatemala, Jamaica, and they're sending people to Africa as well. Dr. Matthew Solberg was a member of this team providing health care to people in Haiti, and he is with us this hour to talk about what he saw. He's a pediatrician, a very well-respected pediatrician in the Milwaukee area, and has been working with children, working to educate patients and also parents regarding wellness and disease and treating disease among children here for a number of years. He spent a good portion of the month of August in Haiti and has firsthand knowledge now of what he found there, and we'll be welcoming phone calls as well. Our number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. He was on this medical mission August 8th through August 16th, and he is our guest this hour. Dr. Solberg, thank you very much for being with us.
Good morning, Kathleen. It's my pleasure to be here.
It's hard when we talk about having healthcare reform in this country. We have an inordinately high number of people who are uninsured. But when I read about Haiti and have talked to you, it sounds absolutely dismal.
The poverty in Haiti is beyond what you could ever imagine. 80% of the population of Haiti lives below the poverty line. The average Haitian takes home about $2 a day. Mm. But 50% of the population live on less than a dollar a day. So it's subsistence living. They scratch out subsistence farming, but often go, you know, a day or two or three without eating. The World Health Organization calculates out per capita spending on health care for each of the major countries, and Haiti spends about $96 per capita each year on health care, whereas the United States comes in around $6,700.
Oh, my gosh.
So you can imagine what we're dealing with. And the infrastructure just doesn't exist there.
Mm-hmm. So a lot of the disease that you were seeing was due to perhaps malnutrition. I've heard that the size of people in Haiti, they're very short because they don't get enough to eat.
Well, they're very thin. We didn't see any obesity in Haiti. The issue there is, yes, that a lot of their mortality comes in the first weeks of life. Mm-hmm. They have a very high infant mortality. It's estimated about 50% of children under the age of five will die. The mortality is very high. About 10% each year succumb to simple illnesses, and it can be something as simple as diarrhea. Here, if you have diarrhea and you become dehydrated, you can go to an emergency room and get an IV and get rehydrated very quickly. But in Haiti, they're dealing with a contaminated water supply, and so it repropagates the diarrhea, and the children dehydrate to death.
And tell me about the parts of the country you were in. Were you in rural areas of the country as well?
It was an area that was just outside of Port-au-Prince. Haiti is a nation of about 9 million people. About 3 million of them live in Port-au-Prince, so it's very congested. The town that we were in is a city called St. Mark. It's a port city about 40 miles north of Port-au-Prince. It has a very developed central area, and then the outlying areas are where the shanty villages are. But you'll see, you know, nice homes in the middle of the city with a bunch of shanties right next to it. So people live in and amongst the poverty, even if they have a good income. So this town was about 60, 70,000 people. They have a hospital there, but the issue with the hospitals is that it's pay-as-you-go. There is no health insurance.
There is no health insurance.
No. Well, for the vast majority of the people. If you're wealthy, yes, and you live in Port-au-Prince, then you can see doctors and use the hospital there and have surgery. But in other places, you have to pay up front for any health care. So there's a number of issues that we saw that people really needed the care, but there was no way that they would be able to get it because there was just no financial resource to purchase it.
How can a country exist with this kind of system? How did it get so messed up?
Well, it has to do with the government and all the strife that's gone on from the Duvaliers from the 1950s forward, and Aristide as well kind of propagated that. There's a lot of cronyism and a lot of bribery and payoffs. The first obstruction we had getting into the country was that we actually had to not declare our medications because if we did declare them, we'd lose 25 to 50% of them through customs. They would just confiscate them for no given reason because that's a commodity there that they just can't get. So antibiotics and blood pressure medication, diabetes medications are at a very expensive if you can purchase them, but they're also at a very short supply.
Mm-hmm. So were you seeing children primarily when you were there or everyone?
Yeah, the clinic, the group of, we had 20 members of our team. There were four physicians, myself as a pediatrician, two internal medicine doctors, and a family practitioner as well. And then we had two dentists that came along. Three nurses, and then a bunch of support people that help us run the clinic itself.
Mm-hmm.
It was also supported by about 70 people within Haiti that work with the organization that we went with.
So is this what people in Haiti depend on for their health care, people who are coming from foreign countries?
A great deal of the poorest of the poor, this is the only way they can get health care. And, you know, the number one thing they ask for when they come and see us is aspirin or Tylenol or Motrin because they get fevers all the time from many different, you know, disorders, whether it be the intestinal ones or just viruses, and they have nothing to control the fever with. And when you're dealing in, you know, temperatures when we were there were between 100 and 105 on a daily basis, you could imagine what a fever in that situation feels like.
Right. And you were talking to me about children as young as 2 years old being able to just swallow
pills. Yeah. I ran into one child, you know, under the age, around the age of three that could not swallow a pill. Everyone over the age of three learns to swallow a pill because that's the only method of delivering the medication. We had a very limited amount of oral suspensions people think of amoxicillin, those types of medications in a liquid bubblegum flavor. And we had a very limited supply of that, but we had bottles of the capsules, and that was a very easy thing for them to swallow.
Mm. So the people who are going to get medical care and don't have money, which most of them would not, considering the poverty rate you just mentioned, would just not go to a doctor?
Right. The only option they have is local remedies, or they'll go to the witch doctor. Voodoo is a huge problem that we have to deal with as well in Haiti because it's a competition type of thing. If you go to the witch doctor and then you go to a medical doctor, especially from a missionary standpoint, that's a very negative thing for your local community because you're kind of going against the witch doctor, and that can bring a curse upon the village. So that's the option that they have is going to the witch doctor. They have a lot of folkloric remedies too. That in this country had those back in the 1800s and early into the 1900s. And where I trained in Tennessee, people were still using folkloric remedies then as well. But they rely on those for you know mild diseases. But diseases like pneumonia and high blood pressure and diabetes just can't be controlled that way. And so, you know, the average life expectancy for a Haitian is about 55 years of age compared to 75 to 80 here in the U.S. Mm.
So you give some credence to some of the folkloric remedies or not?
No. I mean, there are some things that may make them feel temporarily better, but it really does not have any impact on their overall health.
Right.
We saw a number of kids that had dental infections, and without having a tooth pulled, that would be the cause of death for them. They'd have an infection.
Oh, my gosh.
Sure. We had one little, 15-year-old boy who came in with a big abscess, you know, about the size of a softball off the side of his face, and it was simply from an impacted wisdom tooth. And, you know, we think how basic that is to go here and get a wisdom tooth pulled. But if you don't have that resource and you develop an infection, the infection will be the cause of death for you. So something as simple as just pulling the tooth and putting him on simple amoxicillin, you know, saved his life.
Oh, my gosh. This is pretty dramatic. All of this is dramatic. How did you take all of this in, and also the difference between the practice you have every day here and what you were looking at every day there?
Well, it started out with the first day when we're going in to set up the clinic, and we come into a building that the local church had provided, but had no electricity, no running water, kind of dirt floors. We had to bring in a generator, bring in our own light bulbs. There aren't any tests to be ordered. We could do simple urinalysis, but really no blood tests. There's no chest x-ray, obviously. So you're going all the way back to medical school and pulling up those physical exam skills that you learned back then. And you have to rely on it in a third world nation where there aren't those resources. So that was an eye-opener right away. And then you just kind of jump in and start seeing patients and do what you can.
Do what you can.
Yeah, I hesitated for years to participate in an overseas mission trip because I think, I don't have any training in tropical medicine. I don't speak the language. The local Haitian language is Creole, but it's based very distantly on French. And so you can pick up a little bit, but French people can't understand Creole very well and vice versa. But those were all obstacles that I felt I had to overcome before I could go there. And I finally came to the realization with some friends of mine who had done mission trips and said, your limited skills are better than anything they're going to ever see. Mm-hmm. So just go. Mm-hmm. And that's what kind of motivated me to participate in this trip.
Did you, when you were there, I'm sure you talked with people about what it would take to move the country to at least developing some kind of infrastructure to develop basic care. It's horrendous to think, I'm sure for you particularly, of all the people you left behind who are dying because they have an abscessed tooth. Mm-hmm. Who's moving the country in some direction to get health care for people?
Well, there's a lot of obstructions from the government standpoint because there's pride, obviously, and for people to come in and say your health care system is non-existent and this is the way you have to do it steps on a lot of toes. Plus, going from $96 per capita to, you know, even $300 per capita would be a tremendous expenditure for the government, and the government would have to address that issue. There have to be some infrastructure. The hospital that we visited in St. Mark was very basic. It was open windows and beds with people just sitting there with IVs running. If they had nursing care, it was their family. There were no nurses. It was the family that took care of them. If they were to eat, it would be because the family brought food in. If you didn't have a family to bring food in, then you didn't eat anything. So it was basically the last place that they could go to get some degree of medical care, but it wouldn't even match the poorest situation in this country.
Mm. And I know that you were talking about seeing children and maybe older people as well eating mud.
Yeah, for the poorest of the poor, the thing that they do to basically quell their hunger is to get some vegetable oil, which is available everywhere, and mix it with dirt to make little mud cookies, and that at least gave them a few calories and filled them up. So it was very frustrating that way. One of the other things that we saw, too, is Haitians rely on charcoal as their major fuel. So there isn't a natural gas supply. There isn't petroleum-type fuels to burn. And it wouldn't be a good situation anyways because it would throw off toxic fumes and more people would die from that. So they use wood, charcoalized wood. The problem is that Haiti is about 97-98% deforested now, and so there's very little wood for them to utilize. And so there are so many infrastructure issues that have to be dealt with: electricity, water, fuel. Healthcare is a big part of that, but just to get by on a daily basis and not starve to death is probably a bigger priority for them right now.
Did it break your heart to be there?
We were appreciated, and so it does break your heart to see that kind of poverty compared to the poverty that we see in this country. You know, you can't even compare the two, but it's the people are so appreciative of the care. In fact, one of the odd things with these mission trips is that they actually charge the people something. And it's really the equivalent of maybe a nickel here. But if you don't charge people something, they won't appreciate it. Mm-hmm. And they won't come. And it's just a cultural thing for Haitians. They're very proud people. They're very hardworking. They come to the doctor dressed up to the hilt.
Really?
Oh, they have their best dress on. The little girls come in and they're just dressed like little princesses. You know, if that'd be the only, good piece of clothing they have. So you're very impressed by that. And again, they're very appreciative of the care that we deliver.
Dr. Matthew Solberg, our guest this hour, he's a pediatrician practicing at Aurora Advanced Healthcare Mayfair Road Center in Milwaukee and has been doing this for many years. He was introduced to medical missions through Meadowbrook Church in Wauwatosa and decided that he would do one and did August 8th through August 16th, medical mission trip to St. Mark, Haiti with Global Health Outreach, a branch of the Christian Medical Dental Association. We're welcoming phone calls for him. Haiti considered a country with the worst health care in the world, almost certainly in the Western Hemisphere, incredibly poor. And as you've heard, just devastating stories about people dying because they couldn't get relatively simple health care. Here's our number. Join us if you'd like. 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655 for you to join our conversation. Or you could send an email, too. I think John can keep track of those. That's talk@WPR.org. talk@WPR.org. I'm Kathleen Dunn. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We go to phone calls now for Dr. Solberg, starting with Tom from Toma. Hi, Tom.
Hello.
Hi, Tom.
Good morning.
Yes.
Thank you very much, Doctor, for all you and your other people you work with for volunteering. I have a daughter who was diagnosed as due onset juvenile diabetes about 20 years ago, and we traveled to Jamaica 1 year, and she inadvertently lost her little kit. When we got to Montego Bay, we tried to replace this, and I found out that in a town even as large as Montego Bay, there was only one drugstore that even had a meter for measuring blood sugar level. And when I got to the drugstore, the druggist says, well, we haven't had any testing strips for this for, he said, probably a month. One person, one meter in the whole city. I was wondering if the doctor could address whether or not there's an address or something where people could donate things like diagnostic meters for blood sugar measuring or other things like that. And if he could comment on that a little
okay.
bit. Because I've often wanted to take all of these glucagon things and send them someplace other than just throw them away. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Tom, for the call.
Yeah, that's I appreciate that observation, and that's something that we dealt with as well. Some things as simple as thermometers, blood pressure cuffs, stethoscopes, but especially for diabetes management, there certainly global health outreach would accept donations of that, or even financial contributions. Since many of those things have expiration dates, that's something that they have to be aware of as well. But because they have so many, you know, over 20 different target areas throughout the world that they're going to, we're constantly packing up boxes and sending them over. Most of the time, the mission trips actually pack everything in our personal luggage and take it over there because it's less expensive that way. You can save, you know, several hundred dollars worth of postage or shipping charges simply by putting it in suitcases, and it arrives with you as opposed to trying to hunt it down if it's not right. sent to the right place.
So he should just go to Global Health Outreach on the web and get
right.
an address.
Okay. And they would certainly, by contacting them, they can give you some ideas as to how best he could support them either through a gift with glucometers or with financial donations.
Okay. Thanks very much, Tom, for the call. Judy from Appleton. Hi, Judy.
Hi.
Hi.
This really caught my attention because my grandson is from Haiti, and my daughter and son-in-law, through their religious works, were dealing with a minister from Hench. And they were selling artwork from Haiti at downtown Appleton and trying to help them out. They sent an SUV. It lasted about a week, and they even had it painted, you know, really bright. And what I would do is get on eBay, and I'd get all these black dolls, and I'd buy underwear, and I'd buy all this stuff. They had shipping containers that they would send. And I found out a lot about Haiti. And but the one, and my grandson is not well today, and they've done everything, but she's mainly holistic, and she's had chelation done. His teeth are kind of black, but they got him when he was older. I told her, I said, you better get a baby, especially because her daughter is the same age. And but no, she didn't want to do that, so they held him hostage. They were paying almost $600 a month to keep him there. And he was running with big boys and swears he saw his father's head cut off and wonders why his mother, you know, left him there. And she apparently has babies, and after a while she brings them to an orphanage. And they brought people there to put in water, and they brought, they did a lot of things. They were building another orphanage with this church, but somehow they had a disagreement with this minister, and they quit going. And the one big question I have is, I swore I heard that former President Clinton is ambassador to Haiti, which blew my mind, and I have not heard a thing since.
I'm not aware that President Clinton is
I'm
ambassador.
I'm not aware of that either.
No, in fact, in the trip, just working with the State Department, I believe that the ambassador's is a woman at this point. The issue with children, obviously, is they suffer from a lot of nutritional deficiencies, certainly getting exposed to heavy metals. If they are using gasoline for anything, it's more likely to be leaded gasoline. And so they will have problems often with lead toxicity. They often, however, have actually pretty good bone density because what they do eat is a lot of greens and vegetables and things that they can kind of grow quickly and around them. Very limited milk intake, but they get plenty of sun, so their vitamin D levels are actually very high. You mentioned the orphanages. That's a big avenue for people to kind of escape the poverty and receive a little bit of health care. They don't have the facilities to run clinics constantly, but they do. They are another focus point for medical mission trips to have a facility at least that they can deliver medical care mm-hmm. to local populations.
We haven't talked about HIV, and I know that you have said that 7,200 lives, this is not a huge country, lost to HIV each year. 2.2% of the adult population is infected. Is the country dealing with this in some way?
No, there isn't. There are some programs that the United States has actually spearheaded. I believe one is called USAID, and it is trying to deliver medications and follow up, educating the local population about how HIV is transmitted. With 2.2% of the population, adult population, and that includes people over the age of 15, infected, they're dealing obviously with a lot of issues with transfer to children. So children dying from HIV is one of the fears in the upcoming years, with a high incidence of HIV carriage in the adult population.
Mm-hmm. Thanks very much for your call. We go next to William from Green Bay. Hi, William.
Hi, how are you?
All right, William.
Thanks for taking my call.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I just wanted to comment. I went to Haiti a few years back with a medical mission group. I was there for about 2 weeks. And I just wanted to say, really, the thing that got me the most that I noticed right away were the smiles.
Smiles?
You know, it was really, I mean, something that they've been living with for really their entire life, just the conditions. The lack of food, medical assistance, and just that hope and perseverance and those smiles is just something that got me. You know, they may be very poor materially, but spiritually, I think that they're a very rich country.
They are a very proud people, and they one thing that we noticed is that whenever they came in to the clinic, they were dressed up in their best outfits. And I would agree, the smiles are very genuine. They're very appreciative. If they know one word in English, it's thank you. We were very impressed by that as well.
You as a pediatrician are concerned in your practice about teaching people about wellness and vitamins and all of that. Were you able to impart any of that to the people you were seeing, or would they not even have access to things that they could do on their own?
Well, every patient that we saw got at least 1 month supply of a multivitamin, of a calcium supplement, things that they could, you know, utilize. That's a Band-Aid, basically, on a chronic issue, but it's the most that we can do, and hopefully that other groups that would come through in the weeks, months following would be able to carry that on as well. We do talk to them about safe foods and trying to get more protein in wherever they can. Something as simple as beans and rice. Beans and rice are a very common food throughout the world because beans lack one amino acid, rice lacks the other, and together they make a complete protein. Without complete proteins, then you do suffer from sort of a protein malnutrition.
Mm-hmm. Thanks for the call, William. Our number is 800-486-8655. A couple lines are open right now. Christine from Madison is next. Hi, Christine.
Hello.
Hello, Christine.
Hi. First of all, I'd like to thank the doctor for his work. Second of all, I'm wondering what we can do in this country. I'm not a doctor or a nurse, but is there anything that we can do in terms of finding websites that are legitimate to help with even money donations, that they can purchase supplies? What can we do here, and how do we know what websites are legitimate that will get to the people?
Yeah, thank you for the call. Money is an incredible resource because what we can purchase here and take over there has such a greater impact. being able to purchase things at the time as opposed to having nearly expired medications donated by drug companies. That's one thing that had been used before. However, Haiti kind of had a restriction on medicines that we brought into the country. They had to have an expiration date in 2010 at least. We couldn't bring nearly expired medications. As far as finding resources, there are websites that grade agencies on how much of their money goes actually to the ministry itself or to the actual people as opposed to administration. So that's a good source as well. I think there may be links from the World Health Organization as well that would provide some information. But Global Health Outreach is a great program to start with, and nearly all the money that is collected goes toward patient care. Our trip itself was self-funded. It's we pay a fee to go that pays for our transportation or lodging and the medications and supplies that we take over as well.
Great. Thank you.
Thanks, You're Christine. Welcome. Thanks very much for your call. Can we talk a little bit more about voodoo? Because I was interested in what you were saying. Would you have to deal with, even if you had health care available, would you have to deal with getting people to embrace both voodoo and traditional medicine here in order to make a difference in health care? Are there many people who just do voodoo and don't believe in traditional medicine?
The description of Haiti most people give is says that it's 80% Catholic and 100% voodoo.
Huh.
So voodoo is actually an official recognized religion for Haiti. And each of the past presidents have acknowledged that. In fact, Aristide was a previous Catholic priest or bishop and was also a priest in voodoo. So it permeates all aspects of the Haitian society. So in acute settings for a mission trip, our biggest obstacle is just getting them to come to us. And then if we have medication, to take it the correct way. A lot of what Haitians do is they'll take, if you give them a 10-day supply of antibiotics, they take it all on the first day. Thinking it's going to really be powerful magic that way.
Oh.
So you have to kind of give them a little bit of education. However, we're dealing with translators at the same time, so there's sometimes things are lost in the translation. But we have a lot of effort put in the pharmacy section. We travel with three pharmacists, pharmacy techs, and they can formulate medications in a way that it makes it easier for patients to take it. But then they have a translator there that draws out pictures because 50% of the Haitians are illiterate, so you can't count on numbers, and you have to use the sun up, sun midday, and sun down, as kind of pictographs to show them when they should be taking their medication.
Hmm. Let's go next to John from Lake Geneva. Hi, John. Hi, John. Are you there?
Hold on, Carol.
John?
Yes?
Hi, John. Go ahead.
Oh, I'm also a retired pediatrician. I've made 15 trips to Haiti doing what Dr. Solberg has done. And I would like to just say that there are at least six local organizations who make both mostly medical trips and other types of, I guess you'd say, community development operations in Haiti. It is he's described my experience exactly, and I would like to say that the people of Southeast Wisconsin are quite generous to the country of Haiti.
Well, I think that's a wonderful testimony to your outreach. I would like to someday be able to say that I've got 15 trips under my belt as well. But it is one of those things that once you meet the people of Haiti and you find how contagious their smiles are and how appreciative they are, you start looking at your calendar and inking in the next time you can go back.
Dr. Matthew Solberg is our guest. this hour of the program. We are continuing our series of programs on health care reform. And today we talk about a country that actually needs health care. Haiti, considered the poorest country in the Western Hemisphere. And as you've heard during the course of this hour, very, very, very little health care available to the people. Lots and lots of malnutrition, a lot of people dying. Well, roughly 38,000 children under the age of 5 die each year, which is an extraordinarily high number of people, 50% of children dying by the age of 5. All right, two more phone calls. Thank you, John, for your call. Lines are open for Dr. Matthew Solberg, who is a pediatrician here in the Milwaukee area. And our number is 800-486-8655. He practices at Aurora Advanced Healthcare at the Mayfair Road Center. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Dr. Matthew Solberg, our guest this hour. Healthcare in Haiti is our topic, and let's go to Rose from Blanchardville. Hi, Rose.
Hi. You know what? President Aristide, and I'm drawing back on years and years and years back because I don't have anything written in front of me, but I remember reading an article when he was ushered out of the country, I guess under a false something, whatever. But what he was trying to do was to get the poor people in the areas, my neighborhoods, to educate them. And I don't think that the bishop wanted that kind of information to go to the people. And so he stopped it. Now, this is something that I read. I was a lot angry about it, but then I heard recently a priest that I used to work with is working in Haiti. His name is Father Medford Laws, and he's working with the university. So I did donate there, but there is such I think we need more information about what's going on in that country. There's something going on that's really holding that thing back, because no country should be in that condition.
Right.
One of the situations we were made aware of too was the port situation in Haiti. Previously, they examined none of the containers coming into the country, so they became sort of a channel for drugs and illegal action, you know, coming into the United States. And so the United States had worked with the Haitian government to improve that. And through the UN, Haiti is UN occupied at this point, and that's one thing that we saw. There were checkpoints going into St. Mark and coming out, and just to make sure that the violence did not re-erupt from elections a year previously. But now they inspect almost every container, and the problem there is they don't have the resources to do that. So containers sit in port, and food that is donated becomes, you know, rotten and vermin infested, and so it's causes a lot of the missionary staff to bang their heads because the generosity of all the different countries sending things to Haiti is basically spoiling in the ports.
Ugh. Well, she's right. The more you talk, and it's not just true of Haiti, certainly, but no country should be like this. It's just horrendous, Dr. No. Solberg.
And when it's in our backyard,
yes.
You know, I have friends who have gone to Africa, and you know, the poverty there is equal, if not worse. But in our own backyard, our hemisphere, it's a 1 hour, 15-minute flight from Miami. And, you know, right next door is the Dominican Republic. It's now a resort, you know, location. And Haiti used to be a resort location 50, 60 years ago. But the instability of the government has made it an undesirable place for people to go. I mean, there are kidnappings that go on, mainly in Port-au-Prince, people venturing out into places they shouldn't without protection. But we had an armed guard, you know, while we were traveling through Port-au-Prince. Really wasn't an issue in St. Mark. But those are situations that do impose a greater burden mm-hmm. for people traveling to that country. Mm.
Thanks, Rose, very much for your call. We go next to Mary from North Freedom. Hi, Mary.
Hi, good morning.
Hi.
Dr. Solberg, thank you so much. I, too, have been to Haiti, and I'm actually a part of an organization that I would like to make everyone aware of it. It's the Haiti Medical Mission of Wisconsin, and it was actually formed by physicians in the Baraboo and Sauk Prairie area. And there is a contingency of physicians and medical providers who go throughout the year. Their beginnings were very humble. They practiced out in the middle of nowhere. Dr. Tony DeGiovanni actually did surgery, you know, on mud floors and started that way. They started that 12 years ago, and since that time they have built a clinic, and now they're in the midst of building a hospital. But they actually took their efforts about 5 hours outside of Port-au-Prince in a small town in the hills called Choate. And I feel like I've been very blessed with the opportunity to be able to go. As you have, as other speakers have said, you have defined Haiti perfectly. It is exactly what it is. We can focus on the things that we would consider abnormal, the poverty and the voodoo and things like that. But if we would bring Haitian people here, they would certainly find things abnormal that we do too, the amount of goods that we have mm-hmm. and how much food we throw away. And so it's all culture. And if you go there thinking that you can bring your culture to them, you cannot. But if you go there trying to understand their culture and their world, you have a much better and stronger experience with it all. So I applaud your efforts, and I would hope that anyone who has ever been thinking about doing something like this would do it, would look for anyone who is going, because they all do wonderful work, but they would look for anyone who is going and would come and understand what it smells like in the early mornings when the charcoal fires are burning and the roosters are crowing and the dogs are barking and the tap taps are rumbling down the streets, and you lay there in your bed and think, how can I ever be the same person when I go home?
Yeah, I thank you for your love of the Haitian people. I can hear it in your voice. That's exactly the issue. There is we can't Americanize the Haitian people, and it would be a tragedy to do that because they have a unique spirit. They were the first black republic in the world. They're over established in the early 1800s. They're over 200 years old, and they're still thriving. But it's a matter of, again, attacking what is the basic thing that they need to bring themselves into the 21st century as far as routine medical care, even to be at the point that the United States was in the early 1900s would be a vast improvement for most Haitians. It's nice to hear of all the other resources, too. I think every city probably has some similar group of physicians, nurses, and dentists, and other medical professionals who have been to Haiti and can't wait to return.
Mm. Thank you so much for your poetic phone call, Mary. It was very moving. Tell me, what moved you finally to say, I can see a reluctance to put yourself in this because you have to leave again and you have all kinds of emotional issues with this. But why did you decide to do this ultimately, Dr. Silver?
I felt I had friends when I was in Nashville that I trained with who knew at that time they were going into medical missions. That was going to be their full-time job. Mm. And one of them spent almost 10 years in the jungles of Ecuador, and another one is still present in Kenya. Mm. She and her husband run a clinic and hospital in a small village. So those were fires lit a long time ago. But then through physicians and just church members at my church, Meadowbrook, it was a calling that basically said, you know, you have time, you have skill, this is where I need you, and I couldn't say no.
Hmm.
Again, I go back to that whole aspect of I had many excuses to say I couldn't go there. What if I get sick? You know, I can't eat wheat. You know, and so how am I going to eat food there? I thought of that and said, I'm going to be able to eat something. And there are a lot of people that don't eat anything for days on end.
Yeah. Let's go to Marilyn from Cleveland. Hi, Marilyn.
Hi. I have read that Haiti's population far exceeds its resources, and I wonder if any group has made any effort at population control.
I'm not aware of that. While their population is great, one of the issues, obviously, is the deforestation. And that's the deforestation does many different things. Without trees, you can't hang on to topsoil. So when they get the hurricanes coming through, a lot of the topsoil just washes into the ocean, washes down into the streams. You can see the erosion everywhere. I've seen satellite photos of Hispaniola, which is the island that Haiti and Dominican Republic share. And you can see in these satellite images the demarcation between Dominican Republic and Haiti because there's no trees in Haiti, where there's lots of forestation. Back in the 1920s, it was about 60% forested. You know, now it's about 2%. So that's one of the issues that they have to deal with is they have the climate, they have the fertile conditions as far as rain and sunshine and everything. They grow bananas very well. They're looking at ways to MIT actually developed a process in which they could take the waste from banana leaves and make charcoal out of that using a press. And use that as a source for fuel. That was very nice thing about charcoal is it's lightweight and it doesn't give off as many toxic fumes as other sources like regular wood would.
Thanks very much for the call. We go next to Carol from Cumberland. Hi, Carol.
Hi.
Hi.
I was had a trip to Haiti about 20 years ago. And from what I'm hearing, it sounds like it has not changed a whole lot. We carried food in boxes as our luggage and just put some clothes in a little overbag. We were planning to be there for a week, but there was during one of those times of the uprisings, and we just had to get out because the airline was not going to come back for a while. And on the way to the airport, you know, there were people in big trucks and people had guns. They were pounding on the windows at the airport. And this is seemed to be the problem. The government was all upset, and the people were rebelling against that. During the time I was there, I spent time at a very small mission where they had a nurse and they had a little school. And one thing I did there was baked cookies because they found some raisins in their freezer, and an orphanage had been destroyed. And so we took cookies down to Port-au-Prince to give to someone who was trying to take care of all these little orphans. So it sounds like not much has changed except me, like the other lady said. When I came back to Miami and saw this explosion of goods and products, I have not been the same since. We have so much here and so much to be thankful for.
One of the pastors that was at the mission that we were working with had married a Haitian woman, and the first time they came back to the United States, she said she took five showers on the first day just because she could, because there was water supply. Then you go to the supermarket and you just see the abundance of food that's available. I think that's a common thread for many people that come from either poorly industrialized or third world nations is that they see the abundance present in just any supermarket. Even if you go into a gas station, you know, you have more food than you will find in many of the local markets throughout Haiti. But they do appreciate those little things. I mean, that we had any time Americans show up, children are all over the place, and they're looking for chicletas, which are gum. They just something as simple as gum is a big pleasure for them. You give them a little bit of a power bar or a snack bar, and that may be their only meal for the day.
Mm. So Carol has said, and others who have been there have said, that they haven't been the same since they left. Is that true for you, too, Dr. Silver?
Oh, I definitely. You can't go there and not be changed by it. You see the poverty. You see how appreciative the people are. You see the basic needs. It takes you back in time as far as medicine goes. And then you come back here, and you see the abundance of the resources we have, yet sometimes people won't follow directions. I mean, something as simple as that, and things that Haitians die from are so easily treated here. So it does give you a certain respect for getting back to the basics, and that's why we've talked with my patients a lot about nutrition and about healthy decision making, because you are sort of in control of your destiny from a medical standpoint.
So people can go to what website to get more information about you, because I'm sure that volunteers are needed.
Well, for this one, the Christian Medical Dental Association, if they just search for that, or Global Health Outreach, has a link on the Christian Medical Dental Association website. And they will accept. They have a list of opportunities in the near future, places that have urgent need, and donation sources.
Great. Thank you so much for coming in and talking to us.
My pleasure.
Dr. Matthew Solberg, he is a wonderful pediatrician in the Milwaukee area as well at Aurora Advanced Healthcare on Mayfair Road. Thanks, everybody, for listening. I'll be with you again on Monday. All Things Political at 9. News is next.